On this episode of the AI Filmmaker Podcast, we're dissecting a feature documentary film. Welcome back to another episode of the AI Filmmaker Podcast. My name is Ariel Martinez. Glad you guys can be with us on this episode. I'm excited about this episode. This one, I have my good friends, Heber Cannon and Marston Sawyer, and we're basically going over their latest documentary film, The Fittest. And I really, really enjoyed this one. This one was awesome to watch. It was a lot of hype. There was some great storytelling, in my opinion, on the 2019 Reebok CrossFit Games. I was fortunate enough to be a part of the games this year in terms of media. I was there, I saw them doing their thing, and basically this is a result of what that hard work was. Now, Heber and Marston, they call him Mars, they also run a Buttery Bros YouTube channel that is very popular, has grown a lot, and that has basically helped them fund this project. So we get a little bit into that as well. But man, this episode is really more reminiscent of me wanting to kind of pick their brain on how they approach this project, because essentially that's exactly what I love doing, what I want to be doing. And they're doing it. They're killing it also. So, I'm super excited about this episode. And I think you guys are going to learn a lot as well. If you guys don't remember, we've had them also on the podcast as well, previously. And we kind of dive into their process and getting their films on Netflix and whatnot. So this new documentary currently is on Amazon, on iTunes, it's on Vimeo, it's in a lot of different places, and they're still working on getting it translated with subtitles for different countries and different locations. And especially if you're a CrossFit athlete, if you're an enthusiast of CrossFit, you want to see this film. So I purely enjoyed it for the storytelling aspect of it, and the fact that these guys are just doing fantastic work. So I was very happy to get them on the show once again. They're super busy these days. So we had a great long, it was like an hour long plus conversation. It was awesome just to talk to them again. So before we get started, I just want to remind you guys that we did do this podcast live on YouTube. So if you're not already subscribed with that little bell turned on, make sure you're on YouTube. Go subscribe. Become a subscriber on YouTube. Make sure you're getting notified when we go live. And you can watch the show live and submit your questions. This is good for every single episode for the time being. So make sure you're subscribed over on the YouTube channel. And every link that we talk about, all their links, their films, their show, everything about them, their YouTube channel, their website, the film, all of that is going to be linked over at ifilmmakerpodcast.com. Click the link for this episode, and you can have all the links right there for you guys. And a lot of those are affiliate links as well, so it kind of helps the podcast as well. So thank you guys for listening, and I hope you enjoyed this episode. Welcome back, Buttery Bros. What's up, man?
What's up?
Every time, it's always a treat to have you guys to just chill with you guys, and it's always a lot of fun. Never know what to expect. You guys are definitely making moves out there.
Thanks, man.
How has all that been? The YouTube channel, the film, all that, everything.
Fun. We just have a lot of fun. I think that's the word I would describe 2019 has been a fun adventure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then even into 2020, like, we've been traveling the world and doing a bunch of really cool stuff until the lockdown, and now we're still, you know, making cool stuff that we're proud of that is entertaining, but also you know, a little bit more creative under lockdown. So
I think I'm not going to do the whole getting to know you, because we did that in a previous episode, and for those of you that want to know where that episode is, I'll link it. I don't know off the top of my head right now, but I'll link that episode in the show notes. For this one, I think we can just jump into the good stuff here. You guys just did a film called The Fittest, and I wanted to talk about that. That was super cool, and especially because it's along the lines of what I do in terms of documentary filmmaking. It's definitely a fun watch. It's a very exciting watch, and is you can tell that it's obviously catered to a very specific audience. First of all, how was it shooting that, The Fittest? And I know you guys have done films, CrossFit films in the past, but how was this one different?
I would say this one was a lot different, mainly because like we were self-funding this documentary, whereas we were employees of CrossFit in the past. We didn't know we were going to make the documentary until a week before the games, which is kind of standard with the stuff that we do. And going into it, we were committed to doing Buttery Bro shows for all of our sponsors. So on top of trying to produce those, we were then tasked to put together a whole team of people that we hadn't really worked with, or some we had, but we had to get as many people that we could in a week's time to work on this project with us. And it was like super challenging from, you know, being on the field, running around, getting all the angles and stuff and working with our team, to then going behind the scenes and interviewing all the athletes, to then switching that 180, putting the camera on ourselves, and then basically doing Buttery Bro shows and acting fools. So it was very challenging, and there was a lot of obstacles that we, yeah, at the time I was like, man, I don't know how we're going to do this, Ebs.
Yeah, man. And I got to say, because you guys did reach out to me just before the games to see if I could be a part of it. And I was so devastated because I was already booked for the games. And I'm like, yeah, man, it would have been so much fun to work with you guys just to see how you guys are. I'm like, crap, man. I'm glad.
I think we reached out to you like the Monday before the CrossFit games. Like, yeah. Not only were we building our team, we were on the road for other productions while going into the CrossFit games. So we weren't just like here setting up shop. We were building our team while we were on the way to the CrossFit games, literally.
Man, that's crazy. That's crazy. That's how these things go, right? Like, you just gotta deliver. Man,
yeah,
so,
and it, uh-huh, go ahead. And it was by far like the most fun I've had at the games. Like, before it was like, you know, we'd stayed in hotels and did the same type of production from the past. But this year we were in the RV park, and we were just kind of chopping it up with the RV park boys and like sleeping on top of each other. And it was kind of a gross RV by the end of it. But like, I would definitely do that whole thing over again that way, because like it was super cool to be able to like get done interviewing athletes, come off the competition floor and go to your RV park, and then just like have a dance party with everybody outside of our RV. It was a lot of fun.
So, I mean, but before we continue, I should have given a little more context to this film. If you can, I guess, Heber, if you can go ahead and introduce the film. Sorry, I didn't do this before this, but could you introduce the film, a small summary, and where is it located?
So our movie is called The Fittest, the poster, if you're watching. It's backwards because my camera's flipped, reversed, whatever.
We actually see it. I see it correctly.
Okay, cool. It's called The Fittest, and it is a movie about the CrossFit Games. CrossFit had a bunch of – they've had this sport called the CrossFit Games where they crown the fittest man and fittest woman on earth, and they've been doing this for – I want to say this is like the 12th year, 13th year, something like that. 2007 to 2019. And this is the story about the 2019 CrossFit Games. In the 2018 to 19 season, they made a bunch of shifts as a company. So they got rid of, you know, they've been doing this for almost over a decade, and they've fine-tuned a way of how they crown the fittest, whether that's how the test is run, how people qualify to get to the CrossFit Games, and they're actually media company as a whole. They got rid of all of their media. So our movie is about how CrossFit still found the fittest, and could they find the fittest with this new format, given that they don't have control over their media, given that they have a different format completely, and also the reaction and the point of view of the athletes and their perspective going through that weekend as well. So it's kind of a multi-pointed story. And it is available on platforms like Amazon, Google Play, iTunes probably has the most countries where it's available. And then Vimeo, there's a link where you can watch it, Vimeo, where it's available worldwide. It just doesn't have subtitles for some of those, like people from India kept slipping into my DMs asking when they could watch it. And finally we got it on a platform like Vimeo where they could, if they speak English, can go enjoy the film.
That's awesome. I actually purchased mine on Amazon. That's where I get most of my movies. What was your idea approaching this film? Because I know you guys mentioned you didn't have enough time to, I mean, you had a little bit of time to kind of prepare for this. Putting together this story, did you have some sort of idea of what the entire film is going to look like at the end, or were you kind of discovering that trying to move forward? Like, as you were shooting it, you were discovering the story that was unraveling.
I'd say it's a little bit of both. So obviously, like, the main question we had was, are the CrossFit Games still going to be a good event? Like, are they still going to be able to pull this off with all the changes and all the, like, lack of transparency? And so that was almost like that whole question, and that was like the most undertone of the whole movie. Obviously, Matt Fraser, Tia Toomey, like, they're going to be big hitters, and you know, they were favored to win. And so we were like proposing these questions early on. If they don't win, that puts a lot of questions into the test and into the whole system. So it was like, we were still going to tell the story of the top athletes going through it, and Matt and Tia being one. And, but then as we got there and as things developed, we found out that there was a cut system. So, they've done it before in previous games, but this games, they really focused on cutting the field down, because this time at the games, they had over 140 men or 140 women on both sides, and they had to whittle that down to a field of 10 by the middle of Saturday. So there was a lot of controversies with that. And we were trying to just tell the story, being like, man, there's this great athlete that's taken top 10 in the games for the past X amount of years, and they're suddenly cut and they're out of the competition. And it was almost like very surprising for us as filmmakers, but also as like the sport is kind of built up around a lot of these top athletes. So it was very surprising to see some of them fall away, like Patrick Bellner fell away pretty quick, and Brooke Wells and stuff like that. So we wanted to tell a story that was more like, we picked our characters, and when they fought, like kind of Game of Thrones style, when they got killed off, it was like, man, I didn't expect to see them die so soon. But that was kind of like where we, especially looking back on it now, that was like where the story really was the cut system, and then the whole test overall.
You gotta, and I'm just thinking as a filmmaker here, you gotta kind of, you must have been kind of excited at the idea that there's so much controversy, there's so much confusion that this is going to make such an interesting film. Because I feel like that's where a lot of the excitement came from. The fact that these people don't know what's going on, that things were just being revealed last minute, and some people were happy about it, some people were not. Were you thinking in that sort of tone, or were you, like, as a lover of CrossFit, more in the mindset of, man, this sucks, you know?
For me, it was easy to think optimistically, because it's a win-win for us. If it's a fire festival, we're there to capture it, you know, right. And we can tell an awesome story.
That's exactly
there.
What I mean.
and then also on the flip side, like, I've worked with that company for, like, Mars and I worked for CrossFit. That's part of the story, is we worked there for 10 years. And I know the people running the events, and I've seen what they've pulled off over the last decade working with them. And so they've pulled off some amazing and incredible events and moments in the sport. And the core group of people that worked on that were still there, and were still able to pull something off. So I had faith and hope that the sport would come together and pull together a really cool event. And that ended up being the case, but there was controversy with these cuts. Were they right? Were they the right thing to do? Were they was the programming the right place for cuts to take place? And if you having I've always found, and this is, I'll speak to this specifically. There's this guy named Dave Castro, who is the director of the CrossFit Games. Mm-hmm. And Mars and I worked pretty closely with him. And he's sort of a villain in some of our other movies. And he's kind of a villain of the sport, and he kind of likes that role. But having worked with Dave for years, I know when to approach Dave. I know when to talk to him. And if I have a conversation with him in a heated moment, it might not go very well, but he'll always come back with something very thought through and have a better idea. Like if I come to him and say, hey, I want to do this, he'll be like, let me get back to you. And then he'll typically get back to me after thinking about it for a few days, and he'll either agree to what I have proposed or he'll have an idea that's better. Hmm. And so that was kind of like what I thought was going to happen was after analyzing the CrossFit Games and looking at it from that perspective of like, hey, Dave was given this kind of weird challenge of going from 140 athletes to 10. I think what he pulled off was pretty awesome. And I think the programming is pretty unique and cool. And people could argue if it was right or wrong all day, but it's what happened. And Matt Fraser and Tia Claire Toomey won, and they are undoubtedly the fittest people on earth.
Yeah, no, it definitely was an interesting competition. This was those games was the first ones that I had been to. I've never been to a CrossFit Games before, and I thought it was very interesting, very exciting too. And from what I understand, that was the first time they've had so many athletes there. There were like, was it 300 athletes total?
Well, yeah, it might even have been more than that with more than the teams, right? And everything. But as far as individuals, yeah, it was around 300. And in years past, it was about 40 men and 40 women. So once again, it was like very unknown, like going into it. They're like, how are they going to put 140 people through all these events? We'll be here all day. And then that's when the cut system came out. And then, yeah, there was a lot of changes and a lot of stuff that we were able to capture that was kind of like, man, this is drastically different from anything that we've been to or noticed in the past. So, yeah, I don't know. I think that there's a lot of mixed emotions for some of those athletes that were like, I got to compete at one event. That's great. I came from Zimbabwe or something like that, you know? So it's like, but then on the flip side of that, I think there's like a lot of people that are proud to be there to represent their country, to represent their country and their CrossFit community from wherever they come from. So regardless, I think that, there's people that are big fans of that, and then probably other people that aren't. So,
yeah, man, that was, I thought that was incredibly interesting. And I know that, like you said, there's people that are proud of that to represent their country and to just even call themselves. I know that it's a good accolade to have the fact that you are a games athlete, like a CrossFit Games athlete. So to have that title, I think a lot of people love that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I think that gets watered down when you have that many people.
Yeah, there, right? It does. Like it really does.
The value of it goes down.
It really does.
Yeah, and there's an interesting line in the movie where we're talking to a CNN reporter, and he's talking about, like, you, in the past, you undoubtedly knew that this field was the fittest on earth, you know? And now with them allowing national champions in, meaning, like, you qualified the fittest in your country out of whatever country you're from, that they might not be as fit as some of the people in your gym, depending on where you live, you know? So it puts a wide variety on the actual level of fitness that's there. I mean, I still think the fittest people are there. It's just like, you're also getting like people that are still growing and developing areas.
Yeah. You could tell that there were some athletes that kind of didn't belong there. But just because they're the fittest in their general area, you know,
they're still incredibly fit.
No.
Well, they probably don't
compared to the main elite ones. Yeah. You can tell.
It's like the Jamaican bobsled team. It's a similar situation.
Pretty much. How was it different this year than previous years with regards to you guys not being officially a part of HQ? So before, this was a CrossFit project, was it not? You guys were heading the project, but it was a CrossFit project. Now this is your project. How much influence or input or final decisions did HQ have on this film, if any?
They had zero influence, and they even wrote it into our contract that they couldn't. But it was kind of like a non-said thing where like, hey, we're giving you this this is kind of a trial, and it's a huge trial for us, you know, like,
yeah,
we could go out and just make it look like a terrible event. And, but we did, we were happy to tell the story that we did, and, yeah, and happy that we didn't have to trash our friends that work here at CrossFit HQ. Yeah. And, I think the biggest difference is from previous years, cause they give us a lot of creative freedom when we were there. Mm-hmm. The biggest difference is this year was actually in production shooting, where we were limited on where we had access to. They gave us a lot of access, and they allowed Marsden to be on the competition floor with a Movi rig to get these really cinematic and beautiful shots on the competition floor. But we were limited behind the scenes where we could interact with some of the athletes. Mm. And that definitely, it doesn't come across in the movie so much, but filming it was very frustrating, because you knew these epic celebration moments were happening 30 feet from where I'm standing, but I can't shoot it because there's a cloth in the way, and there's secrecy between there and where we're standing. So that was extremely frustrating, but it was just kind of like, hey, this is the sandbox that we're playing in. And we almost put those stuff into the movie. Like, we had a scene where we were like kind of frustrated that Matt Fraser's over there celebrating, we can't shoot it. Mm. But we decided, like, that just kind of makes us look like we're complaining. And as filmmakers, like, you just got to find a workaround. And so we figured out how to tell that part of the story a different way.
That's awesome, man. Speaking of which, Marsh, dude, I was hurting just looking at you on the Movi and the red the entire time. Non-stop, man. Heat after heat after heat.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Well, dude, the thing that's crazy about that is, like, so we worked out a deal with CrossFit that if they allowed us to be on the floor and it allowed us to have like a Movi rig and be able to be pretty mobile, that we would give them all the footage that we shot in exchange for having that type of access.
That's good.
And it's challenging because there's a judge for every athlete, and then you have equipment in every lane. Plus you have like athletes running around in there. And then you have Dave Castro that like has a head on a swivel. It's like the second I even take a wrong step or even potentially like block something, he's like all over it. Like, the guy sees everything. Like, I even seen him like looking up into the stands, like up into the rafters at one point. He's like, who's that up there? You know? But I've done it for a number of years now, and it's a very challenging like tightrope that you walk, because it's you're trying to get in there and get the best coverage as you can, because you're like, oh man, this is going to be a great shot when she jumps up on the podium, puts her hands up and everything. And but on top of that, you're like, okay, but I also got to be cautious of like stepping into the live camera feed, and like Dave Castro's yelling at me right now. I'm like, okay, Dave, I hear you, you know, like. And so and the camera rig is awkward, because the way that these gimbals, well, the one that we use is a Movi, it kind of like the weight has to be out in front of you a lot more than is comfortable. So you're almost like holding it's equivalent to like holding a dumb or like a plate out in front of you and trying to keep it stable and compose a shot. And so
my doing back, all that, my back and, was hurting for you.
Yeah. It's a strainer. And like, people were like, why don't you use an easy rig? And I'm like, cause I'm running with this thing, and I'm like trying to set it down, and I'm picking up other cameras, and I'm interviewing athletes. I can't be like confined into an easy rig. So I don't know. Me and Heber train a lot, and we do a lot of CrossFit, and I feel like that's my CrossFit game. So I show up ready to just get crushed.
Well, the shots came out fantastic. Every time I look at it, I'm like, man, those shots are just so worth it to go through all that stuff. Did you guys see the big 360 setup that they had there? That one dude with the headband and that was crazy.
Most of my shots, I'm like, where is this 360 footage? Because that dude was literally like, he was like all strapped in on every feet of everything,
like a sore thumb.
Everywhere, and you're like, what is this? Where does this footage live? Like, I want to see what this guy's doing.
It lives on CrossFit Games YouTube. You can go back and watch those heats. That they've got a lot of views. The funny thing to me is like the GoPro Max does the same thing, dude, probably better.
And I was gonna say because I have the Insta360, the nice one. I think it was like $500. That image is very, very nice.
And I'm here thinking to myself, like, how much better can this be that it would justify like a huge eyesore there, you know, sticking out like a sore thumb.
This year I'm going to say, hey, get rid of that guy. Let us have another Mobi operator on the floor, and we'll have two 360 cameras on top of our cameras that'll do the same thing but better.
Yeah, man. I was like, that was definitely interesting. I couldn't stop every time they were next to the media pool. By the way, the whole media thing, there was a lot of people, from what I understand, more than before, because I haven't been there before, remember.
Way more.
What's the norm?
Like, no, well, normally well, they in would the be past, like...
It was all just like the HQ employees and maybe a few outside media. Like, they didn't ever really like let people in. And then this year, for the first time, they were like, hey, does anybody want to film this? Anybody, come to the games. And like, people would be like, I don't even have a ticket to the CrossFit games. And you'd be like, well, you can get a media pass right here. And you get right down in the media lane.
You get a way better like, seat.
Dude, there was a lot of people there, man. A lot of people. And was it a sort of thing where, because they're not producing their own footage, now they're going to rely on other people to produce content for them? Is that kind of sort of how what they were thinking, or do you think, or
yeah I think that, like, with them getting rid of all their media, I mean, I don't know how much value they really put on their media. I mean, I know it was expensive, but I know that it also helped bring eyeballs to CrossFit and to the sport, and probably a lot of people into CrossFit gyms and stuff like that. And so I think once they got rid of everybody, they're like, you know, I think anybody can make this stuff. Let's see what everybody can do. And so it's kind of ironic that after all of it, it's like the same guys that you got rid of ended up making something that was probably of quality.
I also noticed, I don't know if you guys noticed, I think it was Rogue that had people out there shooting with red cameras vertically. Did you see those?
Yeah, they do it every year.
Do they?
Eight K camera shooting vertical
for Instagram story on your phone. I'm like, okay, I get that, but like, why wouldn't you shoot wide and then just crop in so that you at least have that footage to use somewhere else besides Instagram story? You know, it's like,
I mean, obviously, it's a very purposeful move, but yeah, I think you're right. Like, if you want to ever preserve that for future use, very wasteful, I think.
Yeah, like. It's so weird to see a $50,000 camera like tilted on its side.
With
the end goal being a video on your cell phone.
Yeah,
that will live for 24 hours and then it's gone. It's just like, wow, that's.
I hope they do it with the store Phantom next year.
Yeah,
yeah, that kind of hurt me when I saw it. So I guess going back to your film, that was a little, just to get some little insight there. Going back to your film, what were some of the obstacles that you guys faced trying to do this? Whether it's timing, running back and forth, the editing. And I noticed that a couple of times you guys were like, all right, I'm going to go to the room and edit. You guys stay here to shoot. I think you had some other extra shooters, like Nico was out there helping you guys out. But what's some obstacles that you guys had during the production of this? Was the whole thing an obstacle?
Yeah, the whole thing was an obstacle. I mean, like, for one, it was like we were doing two projects at the same time and still trying to, like,
with the YouTube channel, right?
Store. Yeah, so it was like we were doing Buttery Bro shows throughout the entire day and like running around acting like fools, but also like, hey, we got 7 minutes to drive a Porsche around the parking lot and get that content, and then we got to be in the Coliseum for the next event. So it was like stuff like that, and it's like also managing a team, and it's like we didn't have radios or anything, and it was like we would kind of like put our heads together before events and be like, hey, you're gonna be there, break, I hope that we can spray and get some good coverage of this stuff. And then Heber was behind the scenes for a lot of that, so it was like he got kind of gathering all the content that you didn't see that was off the floor, and so making sure that his storylines were lining up with everything that we were doing on the field was very challenging. But also, like, for the first time at the games, we got stopped a lot. Like, people, really? Like, from our YouTube show, like, people, like, recognize us and know who we are now. So it's, like, trying to even navigate through the space and get to a place when we have like no time to get there. It was kind of hard because people just wanted to stop and chat and take photos and stuff like that.
Yeah, it was very strict out there.
Yeah. What about you, Heebs? What were challenges for you?
Oh, man. The whole funding the whole thing was a challenge. Keeping up energy throughout the week was a challenge. Like, we not only did we go into that, we had just finished a road trip to get to the CrossFit Games where we produced how many shows? Two shows?
Yeah,
the Buttery Bros shows.
We went to Cookville and filmed with Rich, and then we went to like somewhere up in Wisconsin
Was an episode. Yeah, and then we went with Annie and Sarah. So we stayed up all night, like super late nights, editing those. And while we're editing those, like Marsden is editing those while I'm interviewing athletes before the CrossFit Games. And so generating continual content for our YouTube channel while simultaneously producing the YouTube, the documentary was a challenge, but that's kind of, it was also a solution too, because our YouTube channel and the money we got from sponsors for that was how we funded the initial production for the movie. And so that was a challenge.
And then living in the RV was a challenge a little bit, but it was fun.
I saw that. That looked like fun though.
It was awesome, but we had terrible Wi-Fi. So we're uploading like clips, or we'd finish a Buttery Bros show and we'd go over to Matt Fraser's hotel and I'd be up talking to Matt Fraser in his room and Marge would be in the lobby uploading videos. I want to say the first half of the week at the CrossFit Games, we spent in the lobby of someone else's hotel uploading videos or getting Wi-Fi or just
squatting, eating the breakfast sausages. We're not staying here, but thanks for the accommodation.
They sure thought we were.
That's good. I think I heard you guys a couple times saying how to use the hotel at someone's hotel. The Wi-Fi at someone's hotel.
Yeah, that was fast Wi-Fi.
Now I know why. The controversies in the story. Were they purposeful? Like, when you were kind of shooting this, did you know that it was going to end up being one of the main controversies in this documentary? And I'm more specifically talking about the cutting 50 off the bat, the some of the people that had, I guess, penalties. But I feel like would that happen every year? The whole penalties thing that people get
the cuts aren't new. They happened in 2000. I don't know if they happened in 2008, but they definitely happened in 2009 and 10. And in 2009, they had a crap ton of athletes, both teams and individuals that competed. But they are always dramatic, especially when you've had, like in 2010, they had a former champion, the guy who won in 2007 got cut, the first cut in 2010. So that was a huge monumental moment at the CrossFit Games. And we were like, I turned to the guy next to me and I was like, we're never going to see that athlete again. Like he's done competing, and we haven't. The cuts at this year's games were extremely dramatic because we cut 75 people, or 50% of the field. And then they cut to 50, and every event, basically almost every event for the first 2 days were narrowing the field down and down. Those were controversies, but they weren't that's just a structure. And so the controversy wasn't the cuts. It was more, is this new structure going to work?
Right.
And I think if Matt Fraser and Tia had not won, it would be a much more dramatic story, right? It would have been calling out this doesn't work.
Right.
The penalties are not anything new. Those are things that constantly have happened and have been dramatic points in previous movies that aren't controversial, but that's just part of sport.
Right.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. I think the biggest controversial thing regarding the cuts was the fact that they went from, they start Saturday morning with 20 athletes, right? So they've gone from 140, let's say, to 20 in 2 days. And everybody's there to spectate, to watch their favorite athlete compete. You know, I'm here to see Velder, I'm here to see Wells, Annie Thorsdottir, and all that. And so Saturday morning, when you have like the biggest crowds and everything, it's like they had the first event and then they cut it down to 10 athletes. And then from there on out, it was like, we're only going to have 10 until the end of Sunday. So I think that was the biggest controversy, being like, why would you get rid of some of these athletes and not let them at least fight until the end of Saturday and then make a cut and then just go into Saturday with your top 10? So it was that, for me personally, it was like, I don't see what you're achieving by cutting it from 20 to 10 so early when there's just so much more to go on here. So that was the biggest one.
Do you think, and I mean, you guys have obviously done this for many, many years. Do you think that a structure like that, because it looks like, I mean, they're really trying to make it down to the top 10 very, very fast. But do you think that people will still continue to pay to come and watch only 10 athletes or at least more than that to compete? Because I feel like as a spectator, it might not be worth it if there's not that many people competing. That's my original off the bat. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I agree. But I also think that they learned a lot from last year. Like, I think that the cuts have to happen, and I like the cuts that that they happen, because I don't think on the flip side of that, if you had to watch 140 people compete through every event. But I also think that, like, just starting Sunday, the final day, with just 10 would be a lot more easy to wrap my mind around than cutting it after the first event at like 10 or 11 o'clock on a Saturday when you have like three events left in that day. Like, I'm fine with cuts as far as that, but I don't think you need to cut it as soon as they did. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think in terms of, if I'm talking, I kind of defend CrossFit a little bit in the cuts, but if I'm talking in terms of the test specifically, like, I want to find the fittest.
Yeah.
I think you can find the fittest doing those cuts. Like, I think they were fine. If I'm talking about the grandioseness of a spectator, if I bought a plane ticket, I flew all the way to Madison, Wisconsin, I got a hotel room, I get there Friday night because I work Friday, and I get there Saturday morning and I get to see my favorite athlete run down the field and back, and then that's it, I would be upset. And I don't think that's not what the future of the sport wants to have. Like, you want to be able to go as a spectator and be able to enjoy a sport.
And that's what I'm really referring to. Like, at some point, when do you draw the line as, is this just a regular physical test, or are you putting on a show for the spectators as well? Because if, you know, people will be less inclined to go just to go see their favorite athlete, maybe do one event, you know, it might not be worth it for people. I'm just thinking as a spectator rather than.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I agree. I think that's a fine balance that, that director Dave Castro that does really well. Yeah. And he considers his sort of form of art is figuring out ways to make it a spectator friendly event, not just with the athletes and how many and who's going to be there, but like how the events progress so that if I'm there watching, I don't necessarily need to know what the event is to know who's in the lead, because they set up the competition floor in a way that, oh, that person's in front, he's in the lead, even though they're doing very dramatically different movements at different times. Like the way the competition floor is set up is an art form in itself. Yeah. They do a pretty good job with it.
Yeah. Especially like even with the lanes, like whoever's in the middle lane, you know, is currently in the lead. Yeah. And so everything kind of fans out from there. So if you know that, you know, it's just it's a more visual way to tell the story.
Yeah, I like that. You always know the people in the middle is where you want to be shooting. Usually,
it used to not be that way.
Really? Oh man.
Yeah. For even as late as 2011, I think even 2012, the winners were in the closest lane to where they thought the audience would be the biggest.
They're basically all the way on the sideline, and it's almost like they're out of. It's like a corner. They're like isolated over there. And as you're like, you want people to be front and center now. So I think that they've adapted a lot of the ways that they present it and how to even just, they've had like chess pieces where they even like will move it forward so you can keep track of which rounds they're on and stuff like that.
Gotcha. How did you guys decide who you wanted to take part in like the interviews in this film? How many interviews did you do? How many did you end up using? How do you kind of make those decisions like that, especially when you don't know what to expect?
We chose a list of athletes with whom we had regular interaction with. And I think we only had one, which was Danny Spiegel, that we didn't end up using in some capacity. And those were based on people that we had previously had a relationship with. We lost you. Are you there?
No, I'm here. Sorry. It's my camera. Okay. Go ahead.
That's all good. So we chose athletes that we had a good relationship with, that also that we had shot with throughout the months leading up to the CrossFit Games through our Buttery Bros show, because then we have more content of them as well. And we got pretty lucky that every angle of the story that we chose to tell, we had an athlete to help tell that story. So like Brooke Wells getting cut from stepping on the line was a very dramatic point in the movie. We had a good relationship with Brooke. So not only did we have that built by training and working out with her leading up to it, but we also, she gave us access to talking to her before and after the competition. Other athletes or individuals that we talked to that weren't athletes specifically, like Dave Castro or Marsden and myself, or Tommy Marquez, or a guy named Sean Woodland, Chris Hinshaw, those interviews we chose based on people who we thought were well-spoken and that we personally would like to hear their perspective on things regarding the sport. Like Chris Hinshaw was a phenomenal interview. He had some great things to say, and we knew he'd be great just because of our relationship and the time we've spent with Chris on various things that we've done in the past.
Yeah. We typically do, like when we first get to the games, there's like a big check-in process, and that's kind of like our chance to get as many interviews of like the setting the stage of like what the stakes are and who these people are. And then we also interview the athletes again after the games. And so sometimes people fall off or there's a new emerging people that we didn't interview before. Like, I don't think we interviewed Noah before the games. And then after he crushed it and it looked like he was going to win and everything, like we ended up interviewing him when we were in Miami.
I remember that. I was there.
So, yeah, you were there. That's right. You can't always, I know that there's a lot of people that have asked, like, what about the people that are on the podium? Like, we didn't tell Jamie Green's story or Kristen Holtz or BKG.
Right.
And we weren't setting out to tell the top three, you know, like we weren't setting out to be like, this is your story of the podium. We were setting out to tell the story that obviously like the cuts and having people that get cut. So there's drama there. And then also obviously telling the people that won. So anywhere, in between all of that is kind of how we picked our characters.
And you know what's funny, and I think I saw a review of your film, and the review that I saw, I don't want to say their name, but the review that I saw was that this was a propaganda film for CrossFit. And I'm like, okay. So, and I saw this review before I saw the film, but when I saw the film, I'm like, this is not that at all, because it's kind of quite the opposite. I mean, there is controversy in there. That's far from propaganda, I think. But I also like that you guys did not, basically, you didn't choose a side. I like the fact that you showed the problems with the pros and cons with this, but also you allowed CrossFit in the interview with Dave Castro to kind of explain himself to let the audience know this is what's going on. So to me, you know, as a storyteller and all that, I enjoyed the fact that I got to hear both sides of the story, you know, so I thought that was pretty cool. You guys did a good job with that.
I think the whole like propaganda and stuff like that, like obviously like when we worked for CrossFit in the past, like people would say that too, but it was because we were the megaphone for the company. So I felt like this year was much different because we were independent and we were literally like trying to just tell an unbiased, you know, our view of how everything went down. And I didn't want it to seem bitter or anything like that. We were just like, hey, this is what happened. This is how the athletes feel. This is what CrossFit says. And this is their position on why they made the decisions they did.
Right. And you guys really put yourselves in the film this time. Is that something you've done in the past? At least I don't remember. I've seen a couple of your films. I don't recall that. Is this the first time you guys literally like put yourselves in there, even like the YouTube channel Buttery Bros? Like, this is kind of like you guys telling the story.
Yeah, we you can hear my voice or Marson's voice in the background a lot of other movies. And you'll see we're in each other's shots all the time on the competition floor.
Yeah.
But this is the first time we've done like a sit down interview with each other or with me or Marsden on camera, where we're a voice in the film more so than just behind the camera.
I thought it added a lot of value in the sense that you're getting more perspectives from people that actually know about CrossFit that you've been in there before. So I think your voice is important in this time for sure.
Yeah, and I thought that was it was interesting because like we became characters in our own movie a little bit, but it was literally because going into it and coming out of it, there was a lot of question marks, and we were the ways to kind of like tell how things went down.
Yeah.
Because we were a character in how it all evolved, and the challenges of doing it all was important to tell our perspective on it, I think.
Yeah.
And it's all about interesting stories, right? Like,
yeah.
I don't want to toot our own horns, but I think that there's a reason why we get asked to be on podcasts to tell the stories, because it's kind of interesting to hear how the movie was made and who's behind the camera and why our perspective matters.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that it added a good level of transparency to the actual story itself from the filmmakers themselves. So I think that was really cool. How many people total did you finally have at the end of this to put this whole thing together from production, post-production, all that stuff?
I don't know what the total list is on our credits, Mars. Do you know? Do you remember? It's not a lot.
I mean, we had a team of less than 10 at the games, right?
Yeah.
I would say.
Yep. I'll say this. So it varied depending on who was actually dedicated to the movie. Like at the CrossFit games, there was all those people that had media passes. A lot of them didn't know they were going to do with their footage. Right. So they're just like, I got this sweet camera angle. I don't know where I'm going to use it. So they come to us and be like, hey man, I got this shot of Matt Fraser. Do you want it for your movie? And I was like, sure. Just email it to me at Heber@ButteryBros.com. And so we got a bunch, like, I don't know how many of those shots we ended up using. I don't think we did much, but we had a bunch of volunteers that worked at the CrossFit games that weren't really a part of our staff, but offered to give us their footage.
That's cool.
And then, which was awesome, because if we do source the media like that, like that's a really unique way to make a movie, right?
That is very unique.
And then for the actual like nuts and bolts, getting down to the grind of creating the whole thing, I would say there's probably five people that were super that needed to be there, and that was Marcin and I, obviously, our editor Mark Billingsby, who. Like we finished at the CrossFit games, we were home for 5 days. We met with him. I don't even went with him then, but we discussed with Mark that we were going to meet with him. We were back on the road filming Buttery Bros things. And we were in Miami with you and Hawaii a couple weeks later, Aruba, and the CrossFit games open started. We were traveling every week for that. So without Mark, we're not able to do any of that stuff.
Right.
And then our sauce master, Julian Marquez, who created all the graphics. And basically we cleared his plate for all of December and most of January and said, hey, this is all you're doing. And he was fundamental in it. And then this guy named Evan at the CrossFit games, he was really the linchpin in being a third person that we had never worked with. He had reached out to me on Instagram and was like, hey man, I'm a fan of your work. I would love to work with you. And I was like, crazy. I've got this job coming up in 2 days. Are you free? And he's like, yeah. And he came out and he basically did our DIT
You're talking about Evan Borsier, right?
Yep, Evan Borsier. He's been on your show, right?
Yeah. I've had him. And Evan and I, we've known each other on social media and whatnot. He's super, super cool guy. He was shooting with the Aerie Amira out there. The guy was fully dead. Everyone's asking, who the heck is this guy in this hot weather using this easy rig? Like, that guy is insane. But no, he was probably getting some fantastic shots.
Yeah, he's getting the shots, man.
How cinematic are his shots?
They're phenomenal. He's a phenomenal shooter. And beyond that, he was an awesome dude.
Yeah, super
we brought
cool.
in and we were like, hey, we need your help. You're going to be living in an RV, potentially sleeping on top of me or Marcin. and we'll cuddle. And he was like, I'm in, let's do this. And he came out and luckily we got him and Julie in their own RV. But he ran DIT and really without his help at the CrossFit games, we wouldn't have been able to pull off both the Buttery Bros and the shoot that we got for the documentary. He was fundamental. So I think it was a team of five.
Nice.
What's funny about Evan is I think he got our opening shot of the movie flying over the Coliseum with all the birds. Like,
yeah,
that was, Yeah, like nice. we were all just like dance partying outside of our RV one night, and he's like, I'm like, we put the drone up. This will look cool because we got all these people here. We have like inflatables and people wearing our shirts and stuff. And he happened to just fly right over the Coliseum when there was like a whole flock of seagulls, and that ended up being our opening shot of the movie.
That's awesome, man. Real quick, for I haven't done this yet, but I want to welcome everyone that's joining us live. We did get a comment here from Brandon Fountain. He says, I got in here a little late. What's the name of the film? So Brandon, the film is called The Fittest. We're talking with Mars and Heber. They're the directors of this film, and you can find it on iTunes, Amazon. You guys continue there? iTunes, yeah, Amazon. iTunes,
country dependent, but Google Play, Vimeo, Vudu, go to
LimeWire.com.
Yeah, probably on Napster.
Napster, Pirate Bay. You can go to all those places and find it. Man, it was so cool to see Evan there. That was actually the first time I had met him in person, so I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah,
that guy was a ninja.
So let's talk a little bit about hardware. What did you guys shoot on? And how
this
much
is
of
a
each?
Challenge.
That's the challenge.
Well, it's more of a challenge and also an ego thing where you're like, oh man, you got to shoot with this camera. Like you look at Evan's at Ari and you're like, oh, that's going to be sexy. And then Marston and I, we rented, I can't remember how many we rented, a few Reds. I think we had two or three Reds. And then Nico luckily shot on Red. But a lot of the movie is shot on Sony's. Like this, Marston has a Sony A7 III, and we shot a handful of the non-athlete interviews and Noah's interview with that A7. And a handful of the behind the scenes shots are shot on Sony as well. So it's a combination of Red, Sony, and some Amira stuff, and then some drones and a couple of GoPros.
Yeah. What I like, I mean, it's obviously like the Reds are amazing for like, you know, high frame rates and slow motion and everything. And like, we'd have that on a gimbal and come off the field, set that down. And then I would like pick up a Sony to do all the behind the scenes. So it was cool to be able to like what I like about Sony is how small they are, the mirrorless cameras, and being able to like stick it in an athlete's face with, you know, a wide angle and get good audio. So it's cool to be able to have the versatility of, you know, the big cinema cameras, but also like the small little mirrorless ones too.
When you're on the floor, Mars, and you're on the Red and the Ronin and whatnot, what frame rate? It's obviously I saw a lot of slow motion. Was that I couldn't tell if it was 60 or 120.
Yeah, I was just shooting 60. I mean, for the most part, like when you're indoors, especially when you're in that Coliseum, there's not a whole lot of light, so you wouldn't want to go much more than that. So I was doing 60 and I think even like 50 at certain points, but it was like a lot of shots. Like I know there's people, sorry, got it done.
That happens to me almost every episode.
A lot of shots. Like I see people up there with phantoms and I'm like, who has the time to watch a 3-minute clip of somebody doing one lift, you know? So I'm like 60 is like, is good to be able to still have slow motion, but like when you get farther into that, unless they're like riding a bike or sprinting, I don't know. I just don't think that we needed it. And we definitely didn't have the hard drive space to do much more than that.
Right.
I'll say on some of our previous movies where we had way more hard drive space, we shot 120, like 1 year we shot a whole bunch of 120 footage. And the amount that we actually used the 120 was so little that every year after that, I think we've shot two or three documentaries since then. We have been pushing more 60 than anything, than 120. But it's also event dependent. Like Marston said, when there's a bike, 120 is 120 or 240. But for a lot of it,
if they're just doing air squats or something, it's like, there's just not, unless you're doing a lot of time ramping, I just don't see the need for it for this sport.
Right. No. Yeah. I mean, I mean, is it also because you want to have the option to use it in normal speed and, you know, like 120 at normal speed at 100%.
Yeah.
It looks pretty weird.
Yeah. And especially like just with the lighting in there, you're having to double your shutter, so you're at like a 250, and now I'm like having to up the ISO, and I'm starting to look grainy and stuff like that. So I'm like, I'd rather have a much cleaner image and keep it a little bit lower than sacrifice a bunch of grain and stuff like that.
So I saw the film is a total of like, is it almost 2 hours or is it 2 hours?
Yeah, an hour 57.
An hour 57.
So one or two.
That's a lot. That's insane that it was a 3-4 day event. You were able to make a 2 hour film out of it. That's to me, that's impressive. That's super impressive.
Yeah, and that's kind of like why in the past, like we wanted to try and take a different approach to do like a series, because I think that you could flesh out a lot more characters, and you could have maybe you could have an entire episode based off of one event and all the drama that goes into it. So I mean, and I see like all these Netflix shows now that are like series, you know, like Last Chance U and everything like that. Like I think people you know, Tiger King and stuff like that. I think people really like latch on to like a continuous story that they can binge watch. So I mean, I think that's something that like maybe down the road we'll try and do again, but that was just kind of like why we wanted to set out at the beginning of the season trying to tell that story in a episodically. But when it came down to it, it was kind of like proven that we could do movies. So we did that again. So
one of the things that I noticed about this film, the storytelling aspect of this film, is that you guys off the bat, you guys hit the ground running with the controversy, like with the problem already, you know. Do you expect that the people that watch your films, even the one that you're going to do next year, or the fall, your next film, do you expect that the people that watch that have already watched your previous films, or they already know what CrossFit is? Because I noticed that for some, I mean, I was there, you know, but for somebody that hasn't been to CrossFit, do you give a pretext to that, or did you plan to? Was that intentional? Because I'm looking at it, maybe thinking that maybe someone that has never done CrossFit before, but do you intend that the audience that you're delivering to is for CrossFit lovers, like people that are already CrossFit?
I think it is. But in our previous films, like we've done the whole thing, like what is CrossFit? What is fitness? What does this mean? What is the definition of fitness and all that? Yeah. And it's like, by our fifth one, it's like we didn't want to have like redo that again. And we still like it's interesting to show a movie to somebody that has no idea what CrossFit is and just like be like, does this all make sense to you? Like, do you have any questions? Like, it's interesting there. So, and because like we're so wrapped up in it that it's easy to forget that like even like the language that we use is
I can't say that I'm into CrossFit like you guys are for sure. I've done CrossFit before. I've worked with CrossFit before, but I'm not like, let's say your typical CrossFit enthusiast. And so I couldn't help but notice that part where, you know, and I've seen your previous films before, but I couldn't help notice that, you know, maybe they are targeting purposefully a CrossFit specific audience, you know?
I think that's like the bread and butter of our audience, but we obviously want it to apply to a much broader audience too. So, there's like a few things in the film that we have to explain that like the CrossFit audience probably already knows, like how they came up with the way to qualify and how many people and all that. And we did that all with like an infographic. So I think that there's like enough information that was we don't want people to like come away being like confused, like what the hell do we just see? But we want to give them
enough information explaining the competition that they were looking at, you know. I was just talking
I think that's kind of like the first 3 minutes, right? Like it recaps 2018, and in my mind, the title The Fittest, it's a most people are going to watch this are either a CrossFitter or someone that knows a CrossFitter and kind of knows what CrossFit is. I think CrossFit's become so popular in our culture and such a buzzword that most people know what it is and have heard of the CrossFit Games or have seen it on TV or are somewhat aware of it. Mm-hmm. And really, like, the first 3 minutes are just that. Like, this is what happened last year. It's a quick recap. and it's beautiful, gorgeous, eye-catching footage, regardless of who you are, right? Like,
yeah.
Like these guys are jacked James Bond looking people that are climbing ropes, flipping over cargo nets and throwing giant weight over their heads. And it's captivating. And to me, that was more like the emotion of that story point was a better starting off point than explaining like, okay, so this is what CrossFit is. And these are who our yeah, athletes are. True. And so, but doing it in a way that throughout the story of the film, you get a sense of what these guys' goals are and what they're trying to achieve. Like that's what every story point is, right? Like every story you want to see your protagonist, and you want to know what their goal is and what happens if they get it or if they don't. And mm-hmm. and that's sort of what we set up in the first 3 to 5 minutes of the movie.
That's good. And I guess my last question, what approaching this film, I mean, you guys have done several CrossFit or CrossFit Games films in the past. You're constantly, I'm assuming you're trying to, are you trying to get a different approach to every film that you make, a different angle, a different point of view? How do you kind of approach that? Like, are you asking yourselves, how can we make this different? How is it going to be better? You know, things like that.
Yeah. I mean, I think the athletes from film to film make a big difference. Yeah. Like we're telling different stories for different people. I mean, there is a lot of recurring characters, but like this one was very different because of the format and the structure and everything like that. And then like the film before that, Redeemed and Dominant, was a lot more focused on doping. And like, that was like the kind of like the theme of it, of people getting caught using steroids and stuff like that. So that's what separated that one and made it a little bit different.
That's good.
The year before that was our Decade of Fitness, and I think that one was probably just more focused on like Katrin, and like what made her really motivated was her grandmother and wanting to win because her grandmother had just passed away. So there was like different motivators, right, and different right. storyline. And there's always going to be new emerging characters that you can really tell a story differently. I find it fun on each one that there's something different. And I mean, obviously the first one we made was like Matt Fraser was supposed to win and he didn't. And basically everything that went into that season for him. And it was, I mean, we've grown a lot in the way that we tell stories, I think, but every one of them has a little bit different themes. So
that's good. No, and I really enjoyed the film. Definitely encourage everyone to go and watch The Fittest. If you guys can, let me, well, I know you can, do me a favor and remind everyone where they can find the film, your YouTube channel, Buttery Bros, what you guys do there, because we didn't talk too much about that. Where can they find everything? Where can they find you guys?
So you can follow Mars Media. Marsden is at Mars Media on Instagram. I'm Heber Cannon at Instagram. Our channel is The Buttery Bros on YouTube or Buttery Bros on Instagram. And we produce a show 3 to 4 times a month. Since we're in quarantine, we're doing it more often because we're not having to travel to create it. So we're doing it every week on YouTube, and we do everything from fitness to shenanigans, like we blew up a watermelon with rubber bands last episode or a couple of weeks back. And then our movie you can find on iTunes, Google Play, Amazon,
Vimeo,
any platform, most platforms in the United States or English speaking territories. Go where you typically rent movies, and it's probably there. And if it's not available in your country, we're working on it. Go to Vimeo because it's there.
I'm going to make sure to put links to everything you just mentioned over on the show notes for this episode. Is there anything else that was interesting that you think that we didn't cover?
I'm guessing your audience is mostly
filmmakers. Filmmakers, specifically, right? Like all these questions that I've asked you, honestly, it's also for me as well, because I'm very interested. I'm, you know, a documentary filmmaker, storyteller, whatever it is. I'm always interested to see other people's process in how they approach projects and the final outcome and all that stuff. So, yeah, these are questions that I wanted to know also, but I'm sure that most of my audience, yeah, they're also in the same boat.
I think the probably one of the other really interesting aspects is how we release the movie, which is
distribution.
Not just the distribution of it, but we had initially planned for the movie to come out on April 7th on iTunes and then April 14th on every other platform. Because of COVID-19, we started getting messages around the second week of March or even the first week of March saying, hey, I'm in lockdown here in Italy. I'd love, like, it would be so cool if you could release your movie earlier. And then as the pandemic continued to build and more cities were being locked down, we reached out to our distribution and we said, hey, we want to release our movie early. Is there anything we can do? Like, I know we're already rushing to hit the date that we've got. Cause they have to do all these processes of like getting subtitles in place, making sure it's the platforms are all set up. And we had a super fan on the, inside at iTunes that loves our previous movies, loved these CrossFit Fanatic. And he and iTunes really helped push to get the subtitles in as many countries as they possibly could. And we moved the release of the movie up, 3 weeks, but we did that because, when we asked our distribution company, we said, hey, we'd like to do this. They said, hey, really, as a movie, you want to have those weeks building up to get a lot of pre-orders so that you have a more successful launch because you want it to go higher up on the charts. Like, that's important for your movie. And so we said, well, how many pre-orders do we need? And they said, well, if you hit X amount, we'll agree to leave it. We'll agree to release it early. And they gave us the number of 15,000. And we said, okay.
Wow.
So we turned around and we put that out to our audience and we said, hey, we're going to discount the movie because everyone's, you know, struggling for work right now. So we're going to put it off at 50% off for right now for a couple of days. And if we hit this number, we'll release the movie earlier. And within 48 hours, we'd hit that number. And within 3 to 4 days, our distribution company had organized with iTunes and worked overtime to make sure our movie was put out early. And I think for fans of like, movies, people that want to make movies, that to me is kind of an interesting and unique story for our film.
What an amazing community, man. That's pretty sick, man. That's awesome. Congratulations to both of you, for real. Like, that's super successful in my eyes.
Super super grateful and just proud to, you know, be associated with the CrossFit community, and they step up to support in all the ways that we could have ever imagined. It's been really humbling.
Man, well, I honestly pray that this continues, that this wave continues for you guys, that I'm super excited to see the next upcoming projects that you guys have lined up, and hopefully I can help you guys in some way next time.
Yeah,
to be a part of that one. Well, anyways, thank you guys for spending your time here on the podcast, and we hope to have you back.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Later.
Thank you.
I hope you guys enjoyed that conversation with Heber and Mars, the Buttery Bros. Like I said on the show, I will be putting all of their links, everything we spoke about, the film, their YouTube channel, everything on the show notes for this episode over at iFilmmakerPodcast.com. And remember, we did this live. So basically all of our shows are live. So if you want to be a part of the show live, just go over to youtube.com/iFilmmaker. I've also linked in the show notes for this episode, and just subscribe. And we'd love to have you there. You know, be a part of the show, ask your questions. And we definitely want to have you guys there, be a part of the conversation. So I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, whatever it is, leave us a line. You could put comments right on the show notes of this episode at the very bottom. You can put your comments right there. Let us know your questions, your concerns. You could also reach me. My Instagram is at Ariel Martinez Films. Ariel Martinez Films, that's mine. My Instagram account. I am very active on that. So, and obviously, you know all the other hashtags at iFilmmakerPodcast. And make sure you go follow Buttery Bros. So thank you guys for listening to this episode, and we'll see you on the next one.